D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Adam Vingan and Derek Mason here with you live at Bridgestone Arena, where the Predators are preparing to take on the Seattle Kraken tonight at 7. All coverage here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick will join us momentarily once he finishes his pregame responsibilities. Yes. There's a chill in the air, Derek, and it's not just in this building. It was in the low 50s when I stepped outside of my house this morning to head down to Bridgestone Arena. It feels like hockey weather. I know you think I'm nuts for liking this weather. This is my favorite weather. A little overcast, a little chilly. It's the best.
I dislike this weather. I really do. I'm not going to say I hate it, but I truly dislike it. That's why I have not ventured up north, further up north, because of the weather. But it just seems like it keeps creeping and creeping and creeping south, meaning the cold weather.
You're from Michigan.
Yeah, and you are absolutely right. And I don't want to be in Michigan. If I wanted to be in Michigan, I would go to Michigan. Okay,
but we're going
to live in Michigan.
You and Joe have been southernized.
Yes. Exactly. I like the warm weather, and I like the seasons change. But even with the seasons change, it doesn't stay winter or cold for a very long time here. That's why I like it.
Well, I really enjoy this weather. Uh-huh. It doesn't need to get much colder than this. It ultimately will. But to me, this screams hockey weather. And the Predators are 0-2 to start the season with losses at home to the Dallas Stars. They were shut out on the road on Saturday in Detroit, speaking of Michigan, against the Red Wings, and they will take on the Kraken tonight looking for their first win of the season. We had a Monday Night Football game last night. The Titans' next opponent, the Buffalo Bills, escaped New York. Well, a different part of New York. Well, it's technically New Jersey. They escaped New Jersey back to New York with a 23-20 win to improve to 4-2. But the big news of the morning does involve the team that lost that game last night. According to multiple reports, the New York Jets have traded for Devontae Adams to reunite Adams with Aaron Rodgers. And according to The Athletic, the Raiders will receive a conditional third-round draft pick that can become a second-round pick based on Adams' performance. Specifically, the conditional third rounder becomes a second rounder if Adams makes first team or second team All-Pro, or if Adams is on the active roster for the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl. So I would say it's going to be pretty difficult at this stage for the Jets to receive that second round pick, or excuse me, for the Raiders to receive that second round pick. I'm not sure Adams is going to be an All-Pro this year. Mm. Maybe when he's reunited with Aaron Rodgers, we'll see. And the Jets are now 2-4 after losing last night. So despite the fact that I did predict for them to win the AFC East, I'm not sure we're going to see them in the championship game or the Super Bowl. Maybe Devontae Adams changes all of that. But Devontae Adams switching addresses again and reuniting with Aaron Rodgers in New York / New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Derek, what did you think of this trade, specifically the price that the Jets paid to acquire Devontae Adams?
You knew it was coming eventually. You know, we're weeks away from the trade deadline.
About 3 weeks away.
Yeah, and this has been, you know, the rumor throughout the poorly kept secret about Devontae Adams potentially going to the Jets to reunite with Aaron Rodgers. That was the most poorly held secret in the world. It was just a matter of time before he joined up with his former quarterback, and they're making it happen. And in regards to the compensation, I mean, it's, you know, a third that can be a conditional second. That's not bad for a guy that is still a high-level wide receiver. Now, the numbers don't reflect. I think a lot of that has to do with the quarterback carousel they've been on. But the numbers don't reflect, you know, who he is as a player still in this league. So will it change the Jets' fortune? I'm not sure. After watching Aaron Rodgers yesterday, he still looked off, and that has nothing to do with the wide receivers. You know, he's taking too many sacks, and some of it is not on him. And he's, you know, sort of uncharacteristically thrown too many interceptions. That's one thing that Aaron Rodgers did better than anyone in the history of the National Football League playing quarterback that many snaps. He was the best at not turning the football over. And for some reason, this season has been opposite of who he has been thus far as a quarterback. So will this change the fortunes of the New York Jets? I'm not sure. Their defense still is a strong unit, but they can't stop the run. And I don't know why they allow – I mean, they didn't allow Josh Allen, but, man, the defense you were playing, that defensive end, your sole responsibility should have been, I am standing right here so nobody gets outside of me. Mm-hmm. And you allow Josh Allen, who is looking to run a lot of times, and he's one of the best quarterbacks at running. Why? Because he's so tough to bring down. It's third and one, or third and two, or third and three. You think they were going to let him throw the ball? They said, listen, if you don't see it quickly, run. And that's what he did. Basically, he ran. So does it change the Jets' fortunes when Adams get there? Yeah, but not the fortunes as far as how they will be perceived as the season goes. This still is a, I think, 8-9 win team with or without Devontae. Well, there may be a 7-8 win team without Devontae Adams. Now they're an 8-9 win team. Will that get them in the playoffs? I don't know.
This feels like putting a Band-Aid on the type of injury that needs dozens of stitches.
Yes.
For lack of a better way to phrase that. It does feel like something to appease Aaron Rodgers, something, an attempt to save the season, a Hail Mary, if you will, to save the Jets season. Adams has missed the past three games with a hamstring injury. So who knows when he'll be available to play. According to The Athletic, the holdup to any Adams trade was the Raiders' insistence on getting back a second-round pick, which they compromised on, plus the acquiring team paying the entirety of Adams' remaining 2024 salary, which they did not. The Jets will pay the remainder of Devontae Adams' salary, so the Raiders are completely off the hook. The Saints and Steelers also inquired about acquiring the star receiver, while the Bills were monitoring the situation. So we'll see if that works. As I said, it just feels like a last-ditch effort to salvage this season. The Jets had an opportunity, if they had won last night, to tie the Bills at 3-3 in the AFC East. They are now 2-4. But when I saw this trade, Derek, one thing that popped into my head as it relates to the Tennessee Titans is, well, if this is what Devontae Adams is worth, what do you think DeAndre Hopkins is worth? Because DeAndre Hopkins is not worth more than Devontae Adams. But if you know, one thing you can look at when a trade like this happens is it sets the market. Mm-hmm. It provides a blueprint of, okay, this caliber of receiver was worth this much in a trade. Mm-hmm. So how much could this receiver be worth in a trade? And I think we would both agree at this stage of his career, DeAndre Hopkins is lower on the totem pole, so to speak, than Devontae Adams. And if Devontae Adams is a third-round pick, that could become a second. What do you think that makes DeAndre Hopkins worth in the potential trade, assuming the Titans are sellers at the deadline, which with each passing week, it looks like they are going to need to become sellers at the trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a – I'm not sure if that's a, you know, black or white answer. I think it just depends on who the team is and you know, what's the outlook for this team if indeed they do get a guy like DeAndre Hopkins? Is it a playoff team that just needs that one extra piece? Maybe one of their wide receivers got, you know, went down and they need that piece to help, you know, keep things, you know, above water at the receiver room. Well, that may bring, you know, that may bring on a little bit more of a, hey, we want a, you know, fifth for him. You're in dire need of them. So give us a fifth, possibly a conditional fourth. So it just depends on what the need is and how dire the team is. If it's just a straight-up trade team, like say for instance, the Baltimore Ravens, they don't need, you know, they don't need a receiver. But having a veteran receiver that you can rely on is an addition. You know, it will help. It won't hurt. So you go to Baltimore and you say, well, none of your guys are hurt. You got Derrick Henry, which you're going to ride throughout, you know, especially the months of December, January. You got the second best quarterback in the NFL. Maybe a fifth. Can you give us a fifth for him? Because Baltimore really don't need him. The guy they really need, they got in the offseason.
Yes.
They don't really need Davante Adams, but having him would be a plus.
Mm-hmm.
So you say a fifth. Baltimore may come back and say, you know what? We really don't need him. We would like to have him. How about a sixth-round draft pick?
You know what team I keep thinking about as a fit for DeAndre Hopkins and the team that was mentioned in that report from The Athletic? The Pittsburgh Steelers. I feel like the Pittsburgh Steelers could absolutely use someone like DeAndre Hopkins. They have George Pickens, but after that, their receiving core is a bit shallow.
Yeah.
They've got Calvin Austin. They have Van Jefferson.
Yeah.
I feel like the Steelers could really use someone of DeAndre Hopkins' caliber, of his stature, to play complementary football alongside George Pickens. And that's a 4-2 team fighting for first place in the AFC North with the Ravens. I'd have to do more digging into it, but on the surface, it feels like a perfect fit. What do you think about that?
Because Pittsburgh need another option on the outside. It's going to come to a point where Justin Field is playing pretty good football. But as the season wears and you know, teams start to figure things out with what you're trying to do offensively. And listen, Arthur Smith is one of the best offensive coordinators in the league.
I hadn't even thought about that connection as well.
What he likes doing in regards to how he uses the play action, how he uses the quarterback's mobility to set up things in a passing game. But if you're Pittsburgh, do you chance it by going out and get a guy? Even though I think it's a good fit, I really do. But how much does he change your team? Considerably. How much did he change? He gives you potentially another weapon.
Yes.
Especially in the red zone. Red zone and third down, he is perfect for you. So how do you implement him into your offense? Knowing that you got Pickens, your running back is starting to run well now.
They've got a solid tight end and Pat Freiermuth.
Exactly. So how do you then get him immersed into the offense very quickly? It's not a bad deal. I mean, you would only have to pay him this season. And if you choose to sign him back, you can sign him back to a much lesser price. You know, if the Titans were to do that, what would Pittsburgh be willing to give up to get him? Because they're not in the position that the Ravens are in. The Ravens are good, but having Hop would be okay for them. It would be like, yeah, give them to us.
If they want to keep pace with the Ravens atop the AFC North,
then they would probably need a guy.
Then they probably need someone like DeAndre Hopkins. And I don't pretend to know the ins and outs of the Steelers scheme.
Exactly.
But on the surface, adding DeAndre Hopkins to a team that has one legitimate receiver in George Pickens, and as you said, they've got backs that can catch. They've got a solid tight end. You know, Arthur Smith, we know what Arthur Smith can do for an offense. We saw it here in Tennessee. It feels like, again, on the surface, if I were saying, what's a team that would look good with DeAndre Hopkins? We talked about the Chiefs a lot, you know, a few weeks ago. But the Steelers, especially since they were reportedly sniffing around Davante Adams, clearly they're looking for a receiver. I might have one for you here that could help you.
Yeah, and you know, Kansas City, Juju Smith-Schuster is their DeAndre Hopkins. That's who he is. He's that guy that can get the dirty catches, that can, you know, get the third down yardage when you need it. I think he had, 10 catches last week, somewhere around there. So he's their DeAndre Hopkins. They don't have him in Pittsburgh. They don't have a DeAndre Hopkins-type player. And he may work better in Pittsburgh. Why? Because Pittsburgh is running the football well, and teams have to decide whether to stop their running back or stop their quarterback from running the football. So you set up this dynamic where you got to pay attention to my run game and my quarterback, and that may open up some things for that second receiver, to get open. And then a second receiver obviously would be D-Hop. So he may just work well in an offense that's predicated on play action and running the football.
Andy on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, asks, why would we trade our current best receiver? Well, the Titans are 1-4. They're staring down 1-6. They're going to Buffalo and Detroit. DeAndre Hopkins does not figure to be a part of this team past this season. So if you can get an asset for him, you absolutely do it.
Okay, you said... Well, the texter said, why would you trade your number one?
Another texter says, if the Titans trade Hopkins, that just tells you that Callahan has given up on Will Levis. I wouldn't go that far.
I think
you just have to look at it. You just have to look at it as a business decision. If DeAndre Hopkins is not a part of your plans moving forward and the team has zero shot of making the playoffs, if a contending team, another texter suggests Buffalo and Green Bay as places for DeAndre Hopkins. But let's just use the Steelers because we've been talking about the Steelers. If the Steelers come to the Titans and say, we need DeAndre Hopkins, we need to keep pace with the Ravens atop the AFC North, we have an opportunity to challenge for a division title, we'll give you a conditional fifth that could become a fourth if Hopkins meets certain conditions, jump all over that. You mean Hopkins is not helping this team this season. And as we talked about with Calvin Ridley, it's not all on DeAndre Hopkins. A lot of it has to do with the offense and Will Levis. But if DeAndre Hopkins is not going to help your team, then you should get something back for him if you can.
Well, if Pittsburgh or anybody else came to the Titans with that, I'm sure the Titans would ask for more because you're coming to me. I didn't solicit you. You're coming to me.
So. Right.
What about a fourth? Which Pittsburgh will say, no, we don't know. How about a fifth? But if you're coming to me, I'm asking for the most. I'm asking for the most I think I could get. But then if you say, no, not a fourth, but a fifth, that can potentially and conditionally be a fourth,
yeah.
then now the table is set for a potential trade for him to go to Pittsburgh. But getting back to the question, and you wouldn't be trading your best receiver. Your best receiver is the guy that you just paid all that money to. You need to find a way to get him the ball. That's who your best receiver is. Because if you look at the numbers,
Hopkins
one has 175,
been, yeah.
One has 141. I mean, one is averaging 15 yards, which is Calvin Ridley. One is averaging 12. Both got a touchdown. Your guy that you want to get on, your best – is Calvin Ridley. That's how the hierarchy should be, considering how much you paid him, what he was able to do last year, how young he is, and he's still a guy that can go get it.
Right.
Y'all just haven't been able to make it work with him and a quarterback. So you're potentially trading a guy that you feel, outside of Calvin Ridley, that you feel you can get the most for.
Right.
Not necessarily whether he's better or not. Who can we get the most for? And they're going to try to get the most for Hop and not Ridley, because they know once they get a quarterback underneath center that can really drive this bus, then Calvin Ridley will become more of a factor in this, because they want to push the ball down the field. They want to have a big play offense. Hop is a damn good receiver, but he doesn't help you push the ball down the field.
One texter asks, if you're feeling better from yesterday after the one caller tried to compare Will Levis to Patrick Mahomes, that was the best radio rant / vent ever.
Yeah, it's just, listen, I understand those that are, hell-bent on Will Levis. It's that season right now. politics is going on, whichever side you are for.
I believe we are 3 weeks from Election Day.
No matter what your candidate do or say, you are going to ride or die with your candidate. No matter how many times you've asked for policy and they haven't given it to you, no matter how many times your guy has said some things that have been so outrageous and whatnot, it doesn't matter because y'all like who y'all like. That's just how it is. So no matter what Will Levis does, I understand that people are going to like, and they're going to try to find every justification on why Will Levis should be the quarterback. It is the season for justification. That's what this season is, Adam. It's the season of justification. I'm going to justify why you should keep Will Levis as the quarterback. That's what some of these fans are saying. And they're saying it in the political realm as well. But when you try to compare, even in your justification, when you try to compare your quarterback to a future Hall of Famer, a guy that's won three championships, you will lose that argument every freaking time.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans all show long. Your thoughts on trading DeAndre Hopkins. We saw Devontae Adams today traded reportedly from the Raiders to the Jets for a conditional third-round pick that could become a second-round pick, if I have that right. Lots of conditions. Too many conditions. Either way, thoughts on potential trades for the Titans. The trade deadline, I believe, is about 3 weeks away. The Titans are 1-4. They could be staring at 1-6. So there could be a lot of movement with the Tennessee Titans in the next few days. But coming up next, Tim Hasselbeck will join us, by the way. Tim Hasselbeck, coach of the 8-0 Ensworth Tigers. Had to get that plug in there. The undefeated Tim Hasselbeck will join us. We will talk Will Levis. We'll talk quarterbacking around the NFL. And by the way, tune into 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville tonight for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will take on Kennesaw State at Floyd Stadium. Pregame starts at 5:30 p.m. and kickoff is at 7. MTSU football coverage on 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville is presented by Sloan's Motorcycle ATV. Vingan and Donick, 102.5, 106.3. The game, Adam Vingan and Derek Mason here at Bridgestone Arena Barrel House. The Predators will take on the Seattle Kraken tonight at 7. But before that, on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, our friend Tim Hasselbeck, by the way, the undefeated head coach of the Ensworth Tigers at 8-0. How does that sound, Tim?
That sounds really good. I mean, it's like the pressure keeps mounting, though. sounds great, but yeah, it's been good. It's been good. Victories are a lot more fun than defeats, that's for sure. The guys have done great, and we're on our bye week. So stress level is down. Stress level is down just a little bit.
Ensworth off to its best start since 2013, but off this week, so we won't pressure Tim much more. We'll pick it back up next week. But I want to ask you a question about Will Levis. I did some research this morning. So Will Levis, his average yard per attempt against Indianapolis was 3.5. That is the fifth fewest in a game by any quarterback this season. And these are the four quarterbacks that had fewer yards per attempt in a game this season. Bo Nix twice, Caleb Williams in his first start against the Titans, and Bryce Young, who, of course, has been benched in Carolina. Not good company to keep. And Brian Callahan was asked yesterday many pointed questions about Will Levis, including if the ultra-conservative game plan for Will Levis suggested that maybe the verdict is in for Brian Callahan on what kind of quarterback Will Levis is. But when you hear those numbers, 3.5 yards per attempt, fifth fewest in the game this season, and the only quarterbacks who have had a game with fewer, Bo Nix twice, Caleb Williams in his first career start, and Bryce Young, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not going well. That's what comes to mind for me, right? It's not going as planned. And I think that you're smart to bring up the the Brian Callahan, you know, response to the conservative nature of how he's called plays. I mean, basically saying like, yeah, we're doing that because we feel like we need to. And, yeah, it's hard to consider that anything but an indictment on how Will Levis has played. And I think what probably strikes me the most about that is that, I think how we got here with Levis on it was, it wasn't all bad. It wasn't like, oh, we don't trust him to throw the ball down the field. It was those brutal mistakes that started to like impact your confidence in his ability to do the right thing with the football. And then I think that turned into calling the game differently. Does that make sense? Like, it's almost like, hey, we've put handcuffs on it because of these really bad mistakes. And it was like, and so I'm not saying the coaches have done something wrong, but I'm saying like, that's what making bad decisions ultimately does to a play caller. Is it kind of paralyzes you. It makes you, you know, hesitate and be unsure. And like, frankly, call the games the way that they've had to call games.
Is the flip side to that though, Tim, that by handcuffing Will Levis to avoid the catastrophic mistake, which he has, you know, he has turnovers in every game this season, even the game he didn't finish because he was injured. I'm just wondering if the flip side of that is you're not allowing Will Levis perhaps to do the things that got him to the NFL. Does that make sense? Is it a double-edged sword in that regard?
Yeah, but like, at what price? You know, I think that's the trick in it. It's like, yeah, I think you're right. There's merit to that. But the cost of saying like, yeah, hey, let's cut it loose, man. Like, Brett Favre this thing, like, go make it happen. Like, that's where I don't know that you can't afford to do that, right? Like, you are trying to do the best that you can to help your team win each and every week. And, you know, I think that has to come above player development. You know, it's a little bit like, I'm going to think of an example. Like, look at Pittsburgh right now. Mm-hmm. Like, Pittsburgh right now is definitely running Justin Fields more than they would other quarterbacks. You know, they're not saying like, hey, let's make sure we get him, you know, 15 traditional drop-back passes this week. Like, they're not doing that. What they're doing is they're saying, all right, how do we win this week? It's like, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have all these design runs for our quarterback. We're going to have him not lose the game. We're going to play good defense. And, you know, we're going to look up and have a pretty good record as, you know, we start to head into, you know, really meaningful football. So that's the challenge. And I think you're trying to win football games. And so his development as a passer, as a quarterback, as a decision maker can't come in front of that.
From one first-time head coach to another, I'm curious for your opinion on Brian Callahan in this regard. He and Will Levis are inseparably linked. The performance of Will Levis, the development of Will Levis, is tied to Brian Callahan. And listening to his news conference yesterday, he was answering questions as diplomatically as he could without saying anything that could be construed as throwing his quarterback under the bus. But what do you a significant challenge for a first-time head coach, managing a quarterback with a lot of expectation who is not meeting those expectations. Derek has talked a lot about how Brian Callahan handles this and what it could mean for the rest of the roster and how they perceive Brian Callahan. I'm just wondering what you think of the challenge in front of Brian Callahan as he attempts to navigate a very difficult situation.
Well, I'll say that fortunately, our quarterback, who's my son, has not made a lot of that.
That would make for some awkward car rides home, I think.
Exactly. So he's made it easy on me, so a lot more touchdown passes than interceptions. That's been decision making.
Son, you can Uber home from the game. I got to go.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's really hard. I think it's really hard because he clearly, I mean, just think back to, you know, the you know, how assured Brian Callahan was when he said, like, no, Will Levis is a starting quarterback. It's not Mason Rudolph. Like, I think, like, I know it caught your guys' attention, certainly caught mine. I think you've got to be really careful. And so I think it's really hard to be a head coach when your quarterback's not playing well. I mean, I think that's the reality of it. And I think you look around the league, that's challenging. Like, I think you could almost make the argument that in the National Football League, it's impossible to be viewed as like a good head coach with bad quarterback play. Like, I'm just like trying to like race through it now in my mind. Like, Mike Tomlin maybe is doing it, but like, look, Mike McCarthy's under all this heat. Like, quarterback's not playing well. Like, Kevin Stefanski may end up losing his job. Like, Deshaun Watson not playing well. Like, it just, I think that many cases, it boils down to that. It's just such an easy narrative to follow. And then think of guys that have had success coaching the National Football League for a long time. They've had consistent or good quarterback play. So, I actually think it's mission impossible. Like, I don't think you can have a quarterback playing poorly and people think, hey, this coach is doing a great job.
No, you're absolutely right about that. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and undefeated head coach at Innsworth High School here in town. Tim, this whole, you know, and listen, I'm not asking or calling for Brian Callahan to lose his job by any means. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not doing that. But do you think that these GMs and these owners will start to realize, like, listen, okay, I understand that you are, you know, say in Brian Callahan's situation, yeah, you were the offensive coordinator, but you didn't call plays. Yes, we mm-hmm. want you as our head coach because we believe that everywhere you've been, you've learned from those types of systems. And you can go down a list of guys he's been closely associated to, and that makes for a really good resume. But it hasn't been many times, at least recently, where, you know, the offensive coordinator slash head coach has worked out. Now, we know it's worked out with Andy. Andy's, to me, is the greatest play caller in all of football. So he can mm-hmm. do it and be the head coach. Kyle Shanahan's been able to do it. But it's been because I think they've had really good quarterback play. But now Brock Purdy is starting to struggle, and they don't have Christian McCaffrey. So he hasn't been as successful as he was in previous years. All of that to say this, when you hire these head coaches, maybe, mm-hmm. just maybe, you should allow them to be CEOs first and then take over the play caller duties possibly the very next year, because just managing a team has to be hard. And if mm-hmm. you're the play caller and you're the head coach, how well are you managing the team on game day? Because you're solely, you know, concentrated on the next play, what I have to do the next play. You're not concentrating on the team as a whole, as head coaches that are not neither defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator. They are able to be the CEO of the whole team, even on game day.
Hey, listen, we had a situation this last week where the referees, God bless them, they're doing their job, but they we had an intentional grounding, and they cheated us it down. Well, I'm not proud of it. Like, I lost my mind, okay? Like, I mean, I lost my mind. And, like, so I'm, like, trying to, like, talk to the officials about it and that type of thing. And, like, sure enough, like, I send the play in. Like, Matthew calls the plays. You know, my brother Matthew calls the plays. I send the play in. But, like, I just had gotten so much in head coach mode of being, like, hey, like, trying to address the situation with the officials, that we end up getting a delay of game because, like, I'm still losing my mind over, over something that happened, right? Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's a you know, a high school example of, like, yeah, like, there's a lot. I think I've said to you guys before, you know, John Fox, who I worked with for a long time and have a lot of respect for, you know, he became a head coach because he was an incredible defensive coordinator with the New York Giants. And he said, you know, you become a head coach because you're really good at sitting in a dark room watching film and devising a plan and putting it in place to beat your opponent every week. And then you become a head coach, and that skill that you developed as a coordinator, you don't do that anymore. In fact, you just, you know, he used different terms, but he said you just shovel manure, you know, all day long as a head coach, just doing other things that are head coach responsibilities. And so I think that I do think that it's a challenge. Now, do I think that guys can handle it? Yeah, like Brian Callahan, you talk to anybody, is like uber smart, like one of the smartest, you know, coaches most guys have ever been around. And typically when that happens, guys can handle, you know, the responsibilities in the game flow, management, communication, all that stuff that happens. So, but I do think it is important to always be surrounded with people that you can trust, because you'll get distracted with other responsibilities as the head coach.
Yeah, and I brought it up because, you know, I'm not saying Brian Callahan is doing a bad job, because I don't think he has. I think he's working with what he has, and a quarterback right now, to me, doesn't seem like the guy. But he got to try to make it work, because I believe the guy, he's the owner's guy or the GM's guy, so you got to try to figure out how to make it work. But that responsibility is so huge. Like, coming in, I know they hired you because of what you can potentially do as an offensive coordinator, but you still got to be the head coach of this team, and you still got to try to make decisions based upon the team and not the quarterback. And it seems like maybe he want to bench the quarterback, maybe he doesn't, but everything is geared toward you making the decision based upon the quarterback and not your team.
Yeah, and I think if we're probably all being realistic about the situation, gets hired here, and I think the question is, all right, what are you doing? Is Will Levis going to be your guy? Are you going to try to make it work with Levis? Are we going to try to go get somebody? Okay, who could you go get? What would even be possible in terms of what you go get, and would that make sense? And I think that, like, listen, Kirk Cousins wasn't going to make sense here in Tennessee, right? And so probably ultimately the decision that was made, you know, between Brian Callahan and Rand and what their plan was going to be was like, look, he's our best option this year in terms of where we pick, what we're going to do, like all of that stuff, like that's our best option. And so, like, let's see what the development looks like. And I think that's what this is. And if it continues to go poorly, like, the reality is, look, they'll be in a market for a quarterback. It'll be different next year. And, like, that's unfortunately, you know, it's a terrible thing to be saying right after week six. But, like, I don't know. Like if you or I were the GM, like, were we going to do anything differently? Like, were we going to get Joe Flacco? Like, probably not.
Yeah,
right?
Because you don't want to put pressure on who you want. Believe can be your starter. The minute he does something wrong or consistently wrong, people are going to be screaming for Joe Flacco.
I think the other thing you wouldn't want to do is you wouldn't want to, like, go through the year and be like, well, we played Flacco because we thought that he was gave us the best chance to win, and now we know nothing about whether or not our young guy can play. So, like, I don't want to say, like, it was like punting on the season again, like week six, like all that stuff. Like, but yeah, I mean, like, this was like, look, we're going into this year trying to figure out, like, can you be the guy? Like, that's when we're still trying to find that out.
Tim Hasselbeck.
We have more information, but we're still trying to find it out.
Sorry there, Tim. Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, Ensworth head coach. Enjoy your off week. Try not to yell at any officials next week.
You're undefeated off week.
You're undefeated off week.
I mean, we all make mistakes.
Hey, I heard they scream a Super Bowl for you, man, around town.
I'm using this as my public apology to the officials.
That is fair.
We did, we did get cheated at down. I think we gave it to Colorado, however many years that was ago. Like, that's what we've done.
Oh, man. Tim, thank you so much for joining us. As always, we'll chat next week.
Sounds good. See you guys.
Yep.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us. Brian Callahan also lost his cool. Mm-hmm. So if Brian Callahan can do it, so can Tim. Because you know what? Tim is undefeated. There's a little bit more leeway for undefeated coaches.
There's only one undefeated head coach around these parts, all right?
That's right. That's right. 615-737-1025. Will Levis, speaking of Will Levis, he drew the ire of a very prominent person yesterday, and we'll get to that next. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and soon to be joined by Willie Donick, 1025, 1063, the game.
You must be new to the Will Levis party. Because if you don't know anything about
the
party, they're not very good.
How the hell he get these commercials then, man?
He eats
See, that's the problem with America.
He's got
taste
buds like
with
Dan
America right there. Right there's a problem with America. We got to stop rewarding mediocrity. You understand what I'm trying to say? You should be able to accomplish it. How you going to get a mayonnaise commercial? You understand? And you looking like, and you playing like that. Right. I mean, come on.
We got to get
this
started. Coming up. Dallas.
That was Stephen A. Smith on First Take yesterday. They were discussing Calvin Ridley's comments after the Titans lost to the Colts. But then the conversation quickly turned to, of course, Will Levis's mayonnaise commercials, which is something we knew would be a problem if he struggled. It happens not just to Will Levis. It happens to athletes of all kinds. If a, you know, here's a perfect example. Travis Kelce was struggling at the beginning of the season for the Kansas City Chiefs. Didn't matter that he just helped the team win a Super Bowl last year. It was great in that playoff run. Mm-hmm. Spending too much time with Taylor Swift, too much time on that podcast, too much time trying to be an actor, not focusing on football. That's what happens when athletes who have interests outside of their sport struggle. And Will Levis was firmly in the crosshairs of anybody who, you know, who thought that, hey, if he struggles, these mayonnaise commercials are not going to look so good. And Stephen A. Smith, I think, spoke for a lot of people.
Well, yeah, especially people in this town. Listen, I don't begrudge anyone that is trying to, you know, profit off of their image. And because I understand in this profession, a lot of people are getting paid because of what you do. So why not you get some compensation for doing commercials and stuff like that? Because best believe, what they're paying you, they're getting back 20 times fold in a commercial. So it's just, it is what it is. But you got to understand, too, when you are doing these things, and if you're not winning, they become what people deem a distraction. Then you allow individuals like Stephen A. Smith, who's been around, you know, sports, you know, damn near his whole life.
And you think Stephen A. Smith is paying attention to Will Levis on a regular basis?
No. He's not paying attention to Will Levis on a regular basis. So when you are not playing well and you're sort of seeming to benefit from your likeness, people have a problem with that. Listen, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but listen, they ran Baker Mayfield out of Cleveland because why? His commercials, but he wasn't playing well on the field.
Right.
And they got tired of that. That's they didn't necessarily run him out because of that, but the minute he stopped playing well and these commercials were playing right during a timeout when he just threw an interception.
Right.
People are like, seriously, Baker, what are you doing? And I thought Baker, I love Baker as a quarterback, but even a guy that was drafted first overall that was at a franchise that, listen, the Cleveland Browns is not your ideal franchise, okay? But even with all of that, they still, when they saw those commercials and Baker wasn't playing well, they blamed the commercials on why Baker wasn't playing well, or they blamed it on something else. He has to understand, and his team has to understand, it's good to profit from your likeness, but you got to be careful because when you're not playing well, people tend to use that against you. And we're in a society now that You don't have to do much. You don't have to do much to get a commercial. You really don't. If they just feel that you have whatever that it is and they can profit from it, if they don't care if you're not playing well or not, you're going to get the commercial. And if they're racking up the dough because of that, or their, you know, attention is being paid to that product because of who's promoting it, that's all they care about.
Mark from Nashville is on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mark, go ahead.
Hey, how you doing, Adam?
Good. Go ahead, Mark.
Oh, okay. How you doing? Hey, well, what's up, Credly Dollar? You preaching? You still preaching, man? I hear you. What time? Hey, D Mays, what time is church service Sunday, man?
We got service every day from 11 to 2, Monday through Friday, okay. And then we have service on Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30.
Oh, okay then. Okay, I'm going to have to remember that. Hey, D-Mace, you're 100% right. Callahan doesn't really owe Will Levis anything. I think they're going to have to go back to the draft, maybe get a Cam Ward or do something, because I don't see it working. You know, Levis did get in touch with Peyton Manning and did ask him about endorsements that time. There was a lot said about that right there. But, D-Mace, Adam, I want to ask you a quick question. Quarterbacks in college that come out of college with less than 30 starts, the quarterbacks that get 30 starts are usually more successful in NFL. Levis didn't have 30 starts in college. Maybe that's a lot of what the struggle is with him. But he is really struggling mightily. Like D-May said yesterday, if you put Mason Rudolph in there, that's not going to do you a whole lot better. I think Callahan's going to have to go get the quarterback in a draft this year. And figure things out from there. I think this year is a wash. Hey, is Willie around anywhere?
Willie is
here. I had to get my mic on.
Willie is here.
Okay, how you doing, Willie?
I'm doing all right.
Hey, Willie, I got some good news for you, man. You're going to love me for this, Willie. Let's get our tickets and our bags packed, Willie, because we got an all-New York Subway Series coming up.
I like the sound of that. I'll take that.
Hey, Willie, it's over for the Dodgers.
Hey, listen, I'm going to tell you. Don't say that, because you're going to freak Willie out over here.
One at a time.
Yeah, but hey, Willie, I'm going to put it all out there on the line. Bring Jesse Orozco back. Bring Hojo back. Bring Keith Hernandez. Gary, bring all those guys back, put them behind the home plate and let them root for. That's what we're going to be looking at. The Mets will win it in 6.
Oh, my
They'll
God.
Be celebrating in Flushing Meadows. The Mets are going to have a championship, Willie.
Willie is breaking out in hives. Willie is breaking out in hives as we speak.
Right now.
Hey, Willie, we're gonna guarantee that, Willie.
Not with the G word.
Oh, Willie about to faint.
I'm sweating.
Mark, thank you for the call, my friend.
LGM.
All right, see y'all later, man.
We're going to head to break here. Willie needs to breathe into a paper bag.
I need to regroup.
Willie needs to regroup. 615-737-1025. While Willie catches his breath, we'll come back. We'll discuss the Predators. They play tonight at home against the Seattle Kraken. That's why we're here at Bridgestone Arena. Some interesting line combinations we are expecting to see this evening, and we'll break that down next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game.